The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Welcome to another edition of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk to new Florida State head coach and member of the Harbaugh family and coaching tree, Willie Taggart. We've got a great Jack Talk for you as well. And of course, we remind you, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. You can listen via the Podcast One app or on podcastone.com. And actually, we have a few things from previous shows that we need to follow up with. But the first and foremost one is that McKinsey is with us today, and she did a terrific job researching, Coach, the presidential physical fitness test, as Matt Dudek and I are dreading even hearing about this. But she did a lot of research on this. She never took the test, but she can tell us some stuff about it as we were getting to this conversation these last few weeks.
Yeah, I read a lot online because I did not take the test. I was lucky, but...
Lucky?
Well... Matt seemed to really like it, but I feel like he might be rare because out of all the things I read online, no one was on board with liking it.
Well, it was a competition. It was it was meant to weed out the weak, maybe. I know that I never got the award, but I know that I always enjoyed that time during gym.
I read a lot of humiliation was stated multiple times, embarrassing. Basically, one person even described it as, we can picture it by a horde of eight-year-olds staggering through what would be a cross between a cattle show and the NFL combine, and then you've got a pretty good idea of what the test was all about. But basically, for people who don't know, it was a test that included curl-ups, pull-ups, a time shuttle run, a sit and reach, some endurance. So I think it was 40 push-ups, 10 pull-ups, and a 6:30-mile run.
Did they also do, like, take your body fat measurement with, like, that pinching thing on your arm?
I don't know.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that, too. Coach, you seem to have a lot more fond memories of this test than Matt and I do.
I loved it. I love the President physical fitness. And you got a patch. You got a President's Physical Fitness Award. Everything I excelled at everything but the pull-ups. It was tough to get the six pull-ups in, and I only got six. And Coach McCarney, who was also the sixth grade teacher, might have given a little bit of help there, you know, toward the fifth and sixth pull-up. It was up against the wall. You could kind of get your toes a little bit on the wall when you need a little extra help. Yeah, it was great though. It was a cattle prod. I don't remember it that way.
Well, I just remember like this weird, it was like the skin fold thing that they could tell you what your body fat index is. And you should know, Jim, that while you're telling us your memories of this, your dad is on the floor doing push-ups right now hammering out push-ups. He is, as you said on his birthday, he continues to attack an enthusiasm unknown to mankind daily.
What was that? 28. 30.
Yeah, 30.
That was pretty good.
Wow. Way to go. Way to go, Jen.
I am really impressed.
I don't think
I
could do 30.
That's
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I don't think I could do 30. So I'm impressed, Jack. I'm very impressed with the of course, I'm taking their word for it because you were below the glass, so I couldn't actually see you.
I really cheated on about the last three. I did really well up to 25. I thought I could get to 40. I didn't make it.
So... Did we do the research?
Yeah. So basically, it goes all the way back to President Dwight Eisenhower. He was apparently alarmed and upset that nearly 60% of American kids failed one or more tests of fitness, which was bad in comparison to less than 9% of European counterparts. Basically, the original tests were pretty basic, but he was troubled because President Eisenhower was because he thought our kids were unfit for military service. So hence that little patriotic flair of it all.
And then I know Kennedy extended it and changed a few of it. And over the years, they've adapted it to things. But it's now, Coach, it's totally different now. Because all the things that we're talking about with the pull-ups and the push-ups and the mile and everything, it's a lot different now. So McKinsey represents a much younger generation than the rest of us on this podcast. And she never took the test.
Yeah.
She did some sort of beeping thing.
Should we call it, the participation trophy generation?
That might be. That might be what it is.
Well, that was... I kind of squeaked by a little before the participation trophy generation. So we still had to do a beep test, but it was solely based on running. So we had to run basically for as long as we could with a series of beeps. It would beep. You go to one side of the gym. It would beep again. You'd run to the other side of the gym. It'd beep again, so on and so forth. And then the beeps got, you know, shorter and shorter. So you either had to speed up or drop out. And it was kind of a last man standing operation. But that was pretty much the extent of our, you know, endurance testing that we did that I remember from elementary school and whatnot.
Being a physical education major, the one thing that I learned through our classes was there's three parts of physical education. Number one is the basic physical education, the fitness of everyone in our society. And I think President Eisenhower with the physical fitness test was trying to measure that. Then the second one came with intramurals. You had a chance to compete in intramurals again, but it's competition with competition less than at the high level when you compete competitively, collegiately, and then that type of thing. So one is the fitness, overall fitness, competing intramurally, and then competing at the highest level. And if you look at it now, we've kind of squeezed it down to just the top one. That's the one we're most interested in, is at that highest level, and we're missing out on 80-85% of our population not being in good physical shape, in my judgment.
Well said, Jack. I'm curious how it's going to move forward, if we're going to get away from we've gone away from the beep test apparently, and even less. And now it's more about apparently keeping pace as opposed to winning stuff. So it goes to that whole participation trophy generation thing that we're going on right now. But it does, Coach, it went back to Eisenhower. So it started with Ike, it went through Kennedy, and it has taken different forms along the years. But it definitely, it peaked, I think, with Reagan in the 80s. And we're going to get to Reagan in an upcoming Jack Talk later on in one of these podcasts. But I think it peaked with Reagan, and then it kind of started slipping a little bit in maybe either significance or execution, or I'm not really sure. But it's not the same test you remember and you speak so highly of.
So Nixon and Ford, it must have been going strong, because I was participating in the 70s. So
right. Yep. Nixon had it going. It was after Reagan, and then into, I think, the last 10 years where it started to really slide down. So, but the patch, I think, still exists somewhere.
Nutrition now a lot. I know that once Obama got elected, I was in middle school at that time, and we did a Project Healthy Schools push that was all about providing apples at lunch and, you know, a more nutrition-based focus that he seemed to want to go with more so.
And Coach, you could speak on that, because you guys made in the offseason, you made a change with the nutrition staff, and it sounds like Abigail's been a terrific hit with the football team and what she's doing on the nutrition side of things.
Yeah, she's done great. All the feedback's been tremendous. She's a shining star for our team, and she works really hard. I mean, she's got individualized diets for each and every player, and that's not as much as I can talk about it, but seeing tremendous results.
Jim, when you were in high school and junior high school, did you have mandatory physical education once a day or three times a week?
For sure, in grade school we did. It was like 2 days a week, maybe three. Yeah, we went to gym class, and it was, for a lot of us kids, that was our favorite class. I mean, I loved gym class. Kickball, you did football, we did basketball. There was the 1 week of the year, I think, where you did something with a parachute that I didn't really like too much, some kind of a expressive dance.
Yeah, you run under the parachute, you lift it up, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and he did some kind of like a square dance. It was a whole dancing week or so that was dreaded, but when it was the sports, loved it.
Let me give you one, square dancing. Back when I was in Bowling Green State University, we had a dance class in preparation for our major, and I had to call a square dance.
Oh.
Now you all join hands and you circle the ring. Stop where you are, give your honey a swing. Swing that little bun beside you. Now we all a man breath with the sweet, sweet. That was, I sang that song, and I think I got a B minus.
Wow, you still got it.
Well done. You still have it. And then Do-Si-Do, your partner.
Do-Si-Do with your own. Now you all promenade with that sweet scorner maid swinging. Oh, Johnny, oh, Johnny, oh.
What's happened now, though? I mean,
that's
they don't,
my point.
Do they don't have gym class. I know dodgeball's probably out.
No dodgeball. No dodgeball.
Back when I was a kid, I mean, it was the red balls. It was either in the gym or, I mean, there might be a brick wall right behind you, and you could just pace people. I mean, it was, if you hit them in the head, then you had to go out. So that was against the rules to throw a headshot, but
there was a strategy too, wasn't there? You kind of worked behind the brick wall until most everyone was out, and then you moved center stage. Am I right on that, or am I missing something? Was there a strategy?
You more up. You try to draw people out, because if they threw it at you and you caught it then they were out, and then one of your teammates could come back into the game. But that was probably pretty violent but good. I mean, you could really physically dominate out there. But I think the point probably is, I mean, there were some kids that went through that and probably didn't like it. They dreaded it. And then, it got eliminated somewhere along the line. But my thought used to be, I mean, I'm getting dominated in math class. I love math.
Couldn't wait
right
for phys ed.
Long division, I couldn't wait to go out and dominate phys ed. But, there's probably some kids who got dominated, and then they grew up to be administrators, and then they
eliminated phys ed.
Just eliminated. That's the answer. They had a bad experience in phys ed, so it got eliminated.
Remember Seinfeld? Boy, they used to just kill phys ed teachers. Costanza and those guys about their days in phys ed. I mean, they just hammered. And every gym teacher was pictured the same way. He had those tight shorts on and the ball hat and whistle around his neck.
Absolutely.
And he was probably about 50 pounds overweight, screaming and yelling at everyone.
Then they became writers. That's how teachers got depicted, because they didn't like it.
Circle of life.
But you might be able to make the same argument. I see where they're kind of eliminating some of the math, right? I mean, they're
some of the arts,
calculators. My kids are telling me that they don't teach cursive writing.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is totally true. And I am going to, that's my project until when Grace gets to the age when you would normally, so she's 5, I think she's like 3 years away. I am going to fight. How else do you sign your signature when you get famous and you sign your name? You're not going to use block print. You need to learn cursive.
Or write a letter. How about writing a letter?
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore.
They type letters. But how do you sign your name at the bottom of a letter? College application letter? Something. You've got to. Cursive's got to come back. That one really irks me a lot. Needless to say, that one irks me a lot. So, Coach, fun as always. Coming up next on the show, we're going to hear from a really good friend of yours. Of course, a friend of your dad's as well. We're going to have our first part of our two-part piece with Willie Taggart, who I introduced him as not just a member of the Harbaugh coaching tree, but he's I would venture to guess and say he was a member of the Harbaugh family. Would that be fair to say?
That's the way we look at it. I hope Willie does as well.
These days, news travels lightning fast, which is great if you're a sports fan. Between status updates, breaking news notifications, and Twitter feeds, you can always be up to the minute on every team and every game. While this is great for sports, it's the opposite when it comes to buying a car. Go online and you're bombarded with numbers, invoice, list price, dealer price. It's hard to know how to recognize a good price. Not anymore. Introducing True Price from True Car. It's the only price you need to know, because it's exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories. How do you know if your True Price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want, so you know how to recognize a good price. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their True Price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
New to Podcast One Sportsnet, Baseball and Chill, and the Big 12 Podcast. Listen each week to Kelly Nash and Scott Braum as they cover all the big storylines and trending topics on and off the diamond on Baseball and Chill. Then jump over to the Big 12 Podcast and listen to Chuck Cooperstein each week to go over the best highlights and look ahead to the biggest events in the conference. Listen free exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOneSports.com, and the Podcast One app. Share it with a friend and leave a rating and review. Now back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast.
We're joined by Willie Taggart, originally from Bradenton, Florida, but he was the quarterback at Western Kentucky from 1994 to 1998. Played for the great Jack Harbaugh.
Well.
And of course, you went on to be a coach at Western Kentucky for many years, your alma mater, from wide receivers and quarterbacks to co-offensive coordinator, associate head coach. Went on to coach with Jim out at Stanford with the running backs. You came back to your alma mater to be the head coach at Western Kentucky. And I think most people probably know the story from there, from Western Kentucky to South Florida to Oregon. And now, congratulations, the head football coach for the Seminoles at Florida State University. That for a Florida kid, that must have been quite a day.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Yeah, that was great. You know, the you work really hard to get to a certain place, and when you're able to accomplish those things, I mean, it's very gratifying knowing all the hard work that was put in to get there, and knowing that there's going to be a lot more work going. So, but this is a great opportunity, and looking forward to it.
What about for you, Jack?
To me, it's a family member. A family member reaching the pinnacle of the coaching profession. And as Willie stated, the hard work that went into it. Flashback back to early 90s. Western Kentucky lost the football program. The president comes in and football is gone. Pack up the uniforms. Tell the players they have on scholarship for 1 year and then the scholarships won't be renewed. And then Willie Taggart stepped into the Harbaugh life and Western Kentucky life. And Jim can tell the story best. Let's take it to this point. I mean, I am ready to pack it in myself and find another job. I'm in my office, my hands in my head, thinking, how am I going to get the hell out of here? Jim walks in. He's gone down to Florida and asked what's going on. I told him it was over. We couldn't recruit. Program is dead. President didn't want football. I'm looking to find a way out. And Jim said,
it can't be over. We'll find a way. And we did. Willie Taggart and a lot of great players. But Willie Taggart has hung the moon with his life as a football player, as a football coach, as a husband and a father. And I'd love to get into you talking about your entire family. But when you look at what he's accomplished, record-setting quarterback at Western Kentucky, four-year starter. Jersey retired. The number one jersey now hangs in the rafters at Western Kentucky University. You could make the case that he saved the Western Kentucky football program not once but twice. Once as a player, you pointed out, as the football program had been dropped, in comes Willie Taggart the following fall and becomes the starting quarterback and a Western Kentucky legend as a football player. And then as a head coach, comes into the program when Western Kentucky had lost 21 or 22 straight? 20 straight games. Mm-hmm. Then he became the head coach at Western Kentucky, and that program, he got that program thriving, and it's still going that way today. And then as a husband, as a father, nobody I know better. And as a friend, nobody I know better than Willie Taggart. So the man with his life has hung the moon.
What do you have to say about that, Willie?
Well, I will say if you think about coaching and what it accomplished, I had great coaches. I had great mentors, Jack Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh. I tell everyone to this day, my life changed when I was 16, 17 years old when I met Jim Harbaugh. And it's just amazing. Just I look at my journey and where I'm at now and just the little things you get from coaching. And if you just – I hear Jim said a lot, you know, when he talked to the guys, give your coach what he wants, you know. And if you just listen, so many great things happen. But, I had great mentors, and that's become a big part of my life and a big reason why I decided to coach is because of how these two guys changed my life. I can remember sitting in the meeting – and Coach Harbaugh and I, we were discussing the ISO. We called it 2-3 play, the ISO play. And he was diagramming the play. And the way he sold the play to me, it kind of when I decided, okay, I want to coach. You know, he was like, man. I mean, he was so enthusiastic about it. And he always said, when I pass, I want that play diagram on my tombstone. You know, but Coach did such a great job of selling the play to me and really is to the point to where, you know what, I want to do this one day. And again, I grew so much being at West Kentucky and Coach Harbaugh and like I say, Jim recruiting me. And that was one heck of an experience, Jim recruiting and to have an NFL quarterback call you while you're in high school, you know. And Jim could have been doing a lot of other things, but he was taking the time out to build a relationship with me. And think a high school kid talking to a NFL quarterback coming out of high school, that was big time. And I remember him coming in on campus. I take you back to this story. I mean, I remember coming home from practice one day, and my sister said, a guy by the name of Jim Harbaugh called and from Western Kentucky and wanted you to call him back. And I started thinking, Jim Harbaugh, and at the time, we didn't have long distance. I had to go to the payphone and call him back. I don't even know about payphones anymore. But as I'm walking to the payphone, I'm thinking, man, I heard this name, Jim Harbaugh, before. And it just couldn't hit me at the time. And then I called, and Jim answered the phone and asked, can I speak to Jim Harbaugh? He's like, speaking. And I said, this is Willie Taggart. My sister told me you called. I was calling him. Like, yeah, Willie, he's talking. And then he asked me, do you know who Jim Harbaugh is? And then I was like, the only Jim Harbaugh I know plays for the Chicago Bears. He's like, that's me. And I'm like, yeah, right.
He had his foot in the door.
And I was like, yeah, right. He's like, sure. And he put Coach Harbaugh on the phone. And I remember it like it was yesterday, Jim telling me he'll be down on the to see me at school on a Tuesday at lunchtime. And I remember calling my
There was a contact period, I'd like to point out. during a contact period.
Yes, it was. And I remember
cafeteria is where we first met.
Yes, sir. And I remember telling my high school coach, you know, guy Jim Harbaugh, can you check to see if this is true? And he looked it up. He sure enough, that's Jim's dad, and Jim, you know, that's Jim Harbaugh. I said, well, Coach, he said he'll be here Tuesday at lunch. And sure enough, Jim and Coach Dinsdorf showed up. And my good friend, Chevin Wiggins, he was Florida Mr. Football, so he was the BMOC, you know, but not that day, you know. And Jim came in, I was the BMOC that day, and that was really nice.
The rest of the story was Willie was the second player I recruited and the first player that I ever signed for Western Kentucky, but I'd gone to Apopka the day before in Orlando. They were in the state championship with Manatee.
In
the playoffs.
We beat them.
We beat them in the playoffs. So I was talking to Coach Gerke at Apopka, and there's a really good fullback there who said he was interested in Western Kentucky. I was all fired up. I mean, we're going to get a fullback. Dad loves a fullback and good-looking player, really good on tape. And then I went and talked to Coach Gerke. He said, no, he's committed to Appalachian State. And I said, well, he said he wanted to take a visit. Nope. When somebody commits, that's where they compete. And I was, you know, I just talked to him in the hallway. He really, really wants to check out Western. It gives him another option, Coach. And said, nope, that's final. And I walked out of there very, very depressed, very demoralized, you know.
First bloody nose.
And then the day two was Manatee High School and Willie Taggart. And the rest, as they say, is history. So that was phenomenal. Went to your basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
Gloria, John,
came,
I mean, your
house.
Whole family. It was that was the beginning of a long and trusting friendship.
Do you guys remember his tape, his high school tape, what it looked like?
Yeah. In fact, at a Popka game where I was kind of demoralized, I was, well, who's this guy here? I like this guy from Manatee. So scooted out of there and over to Manatee High School. But he was a great running quarterback. He would circle the defense. People would have angles on him, and he would just outrun the angles. That was the first thing that popped up. I mean, that's somebody that can outrun an angle of a defensive back.
We were running the triple option at the time. Quarterback under center, fullback, 2 yards behind the heels of the quarterback, hand in the dirt, right? He'd run that angle off of the right hip of the right guard, up the field he would go, riding to side about 10, 15 minutes a day, right, Willie?
Yep.
4-year starter. At one time, Ira, he was the all-time leading rusher from the quarterback position in the history of college football. I mean, he would put 260, 200.
Sometimes 300. Do you have 300-yard rushing game?
I had I had 290 against Southern Illinois. When I finally listened to Coach, he was trying to give me this.
Here's a great story. He's rushing for 1,000 yards a game in every game, running him 20 times a game, getting just hammered at times. Back to the huddle he would go. And I kept telling him, Willie, this could be easy. When you come down on the option, and there's a guy to option, run at his inside hip. Right at his inside hip. And when you get to where you can reach him, just take the ball and just give it a little 6-inch move as if you're pitching it. I swear you're going to move him off of that position and you'll run right through his spot. He could not grasp that. Right, really? Yep. I'm not exaggerating. Yep. We're playing Southern Illinois, second half, and we're moving the ball pretty good. He runs the option to the right. The option guy's there, feet moving, arm out, doing the classic. He came out and made a six-inch move, shoulders. The guy went flying to the pitch, and he kind of like, where'd he go? Put it in gear, went about 60 yards, yep. And one of the great moments for a coach, he comes to the sideline, he looks at me and says, "Coach, it worked!" And we embraced each other, and I thought, that's what coaching is all about. Yep. Can you remember that, Willie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, things got a lot easier. I didn't take as many hits after that.
Willie Taggart's our guest here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. So that's the birth of your career, mm-hmm. And then you get to stick around and you start coaching at Western Kentucky. Mm-hmm. A great opportunity to start at your alma mater.
Yeah, that was great, and it was awesome with Coach Harbaugh to give me an opportunity. You know, I can remember thinking, you know, I'm going to play in the NFL one day. I look at some of the guys getting drafted, and it's like, oh, I did this against that guy and all, and I just knew I was going to go. And draft day came around, and didn't get a phone call. Waiting after the draft, waiting for a phone call, hopefully get a free agent. And then I got this call, and I see this number. I didn't know who the number was. And they call, and now I'm nervous. I'm like, uh-oh, this could be it. I get a call, and it's like, yes, can I speak to Willie Taggart? I'm like, oh, this might be it. This might be it. He's like, yeah, this. And he couldn't hold it long enough. Then he's like, this is Jim Harbaugh. You know, Jim had called me. I thought it was the NFL team calling me, going to pick me up or whatever. And he asked me, again, have I heard from anybody or anything? And it didn't work out. And Coach Harbaugh had not, he had a job opening for me, a strict and earnest job. And he told me, now you can chase your dreams and see if you can get on with a team. Or I got to, he said, I'll save it for you. Or you can start now and go to work. And I remember being down at the Tampa Bay Storm for about 2 weeks and thought about it. I remember leaving high school. I said it was three things I wanted in life. I wanted to be the first in my family to graduate from college. I wanted to find my wife in college. And I wanted to go to the NFL so I can take care of my family. You know, those three things I wanted. So I was getting married that upcoming summer, you know, and I had graduated already. So I was down there after a while. I was like, you know what? If I want to keep my wife, I better get a job, you know, and start working. So I told Coach, you know, I'd like to come back and take him up on that offer. And it was the best decision I ever made. To learn under Jack Harbaugh and then to win a championship with him. I mean, Coach, just like Bo had here, those who stay will be champion. And it was there when I first got to Western Kentucky. And then 10 years later, we win a national championship. It was pretty cool seeing that. But to be able to learn under Coach and to win at the highest level there when we were at Western was awesome.
You check box number one, you check box number two, and sometimes box number three changes.
Yep.
And you're able to check that one too.
Just got to tell so many great stories about Willie and playing at Western, but we went to South Florida, Willie's senior year. Jim Leavitt was the head coach down there, and we were playing in Raymond James Stadium from Western Kentucky to Raymond. There was about 25,000 people there. Willie's gone home. He's coming home. And of the 25,000 people there, probably 75 of them were Taggarts. They all had T-shirts made up. Yeah. You know, Western Kentucky University, Taggart on the back, number one. They were sitting right behind the bench, all Willie's friends and family, and game didn't start out well. We were down 17-0, and Willie had not played well. In fact, he fumbled when it was 10-0. They took it in and made it 17-0, and he's coming off the field, and he's about 25 yards away from me, and we get eye contact. He looks at me, and I look at him. Coming to our bench. So, Willie, pick it up from there.
Well, after I fumbled the ball, I was like, uh-oh, Coach is getting ready to get me. not only is he going to get me, he's going to get me in front of a friend. You know, so, so as soon as I'm getting off the ground, literally getting off the ground, I'm looking for Coach. I'm like, I'm getting ready to get it, you know. Like you said, I wasn't playing well. And then I see him walking down, so I tried to walk around our players and get to the offensive bench and Coach cut through the players and met me, you know. And then and I had my head down like, oh, boy, I'm getting ready to get it. Because Coach can give it to you now. So, like, I'm going to get it. He looked at me. He's like, it was like the best coaching job, by the way. He was like, I'm not mad at you. He's like, I feel sorry for you. He's like, you're back home in front of your family and friends. You're just not playing like you normally play. And it was like this weight lifted off my shoulder. And after that, the next series, it went back to what we do and had one of my better games that game, and we came back and won it.
We won by about 14 points, 260 yards rushing. At the end of the game, Jim, we were trying to run the clock out, and we had a two-score lead with like 2 minutes and 30 seconds to go, and I couldn't mathematically figure out with the timeouts, can we afford to – we can't kneel on the ball, so we need it. So we ran a quarterback option, right?
Yep.
So Willie busted out for about 14 yards. He gets tackled. He's on the ground. First down. Yeah. The clock stops, and it only ticked about 10 seconds off. Do it again. So he ran it again, 14 yards. He's just taking it down the field. So finally – He runs, he's wide open, and he just drops to the ground. I said, Willie, what's wrong? I'm tired. He said, look at the clock. We can kneel.
I just want to know how you said it. I mean, he comes out there. I'm not – you cut through the bench. You found Willie after he fumbled. I'm not mad at you. I just feel sorry.
I really
– tell me how you said it. What were you feeling inside?
In fact, I put my arms around
him.
Willie, I want you to know I'm not mad at you. Because he had his eyes were looking like he was – you know how when coaches, players, they brace, they know it's coming?
Yeah.
And he wasn't like – he was just like, well, give it to me. I know my family and friends are here. I go, no, I'm not mad at you, Willie. I'm not mad at you. I feel sorry for you. You're laying the biggest egg that's ever been laid in football in front of your family. No, there's nothing I can say to you, but I'm sorry for you. Go over there and sit down. And then things just turned around, right, Willie?
Yes, sir. I think the next series I had like a 60-yard run, and it was the rest was history.
Coach greatness, Jack Harbaugh.
That nothing playing there. I did. I felt sorry for him.
Coaches are, you know, you guys have to work with the neck up of players, and depending upon what you have to say, that's obviously it worked in the moment.
What, one more story. We're playing for the national championship in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Willie is the offensive coordinator. And that season, it was an interesting season. We were 2-3. We won our next 10 games to qualify for the national championship. Playing well, and we're down. Now this wasn't McNeese State. This was Georgia Southern.
Georgia Southern.
We were down. We were down by four
at least. Yes.
And then we're driving down 2 minute drive, which we didn't have, if I recall. Yeah. So we're driving down. It's fourth down and four at about the 50-yard line. Mm-hmm. And Willie's calling all the plays, and I'm just listening. Willie, what was the play that you called?
It was swipe.
Swipe.
Yeah, we practiced this all year, never ran it in the game. Every week we were practicing, but we never ran it in the game. You know.
So our season is dependent on these fourth and four call on the 50-yard line to whether we go down the field and have a chance to score or pack the uniforms up and go home. And I'm listening on the phone. I hear, swipe. Swipe! Where did swipe come from? And Willie explains, Coach, relax. We practice this every practice. We practice this every week. This is the call for this person. I said, Willie, change the call. Too late, Coach. They're coming out of the huddle. Is that how it's
done? Come out. We hit the fullback Johnson on a 30-yard game.
Mm-hmm. A little Texas route.
A little Texas route, yeah.
He was flat and comes back. And, and Jason Michael threw it a little low.
Yeah, he made a great catch. Yeah.
He had to catch it right off his shoe tops. Then he goes about six, seven more yards. First down. Then we go and score.
Yes, sir.
Willie. I've been waiting for this moment. What made you call the swipe play?
Well, it was 2 minutes, and they knew it. And I think they knew we didn't necessarily have a two-minute offense. So it just kept everyone back. So it's like it's 4 yards. They're going to drop everyone back. Let's throw the ball to the back underneath. And he's one of our better players. So let's get the ball to one of our better players in that game. And
Jeremy Johnson?
Jeremy Johnson.
Jeremy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great calls in my career, I promise you. Thank you.
Well, I tell you what, another one in that game, during that series, we went. We called a timeout after we got the first down and swipe, and we called Allie. This is your play call now. Coach Harbaugh called Allie, and he told our receiver, the receiver that caught the ball, usually he's on the inside. He said, on this play, I want you to get on the outside, and told the other receiver to get inside, and told Jason Michaels to throw it up to him. And sure enough, Jason threw it, and Rooney caught the ball, kept his foot right in bounds on the 2-yard line, and then we scored the next play to go in.
Rooney, did he start as a quarterback?
He did.
He started out as a quarterback.
He was like at Memphis, wasn't he, Willie? Yep. Transferred out of Memphis.
Yep. It
was one of the great catches.
Yeah, I remember
one of the great catches, 1 foot out of bounds. He threw it about 2 yards out of bounds, and he had to keep the foot in and reach out of bounds. And then we ran the here's another thing. Willie called the plays. We were on the 1 yard line. We could be on the 1 yard line, could we, Willie?
Yep.
First play was going to be a ISO or a power, and they were all ganged up in there. Yep. Sure enough, we ran it. Sometimes we made it, most of the time we didn't. But the next play, Willie, is
28.
I mean, it was just
option.
Yep.
You'd ride it in, you know, and they were all bunched in there, and it all come. And then the quarterback, we had an option on the pitch mine. Yep. How many touchdowns do you think we scored on that?
Majority, at least 90% of them, especially once we got in the red zone down there.
And it was in that sequence, wasn't it?
Yep.
Great story.
Coaches have trapdoor memories. I mean, I know you helped build the team and were a part of it, but you guys remember every play. You remember the personnel of the plays. And this is from 10-plus years ago. You've coached a lot of players since then. You've had a lot of players in your careers.
That was a big game. Yeah. That was a big game.
Yes.
And Willie's had great success since then.
What made you bring him out to Stanford?
I tried to hire Willie when I was at the University of San Diego as well, and didn't quite have the resources to get him all the way out there, but he considered it and was trying to make it work, and you know, we just both decided it's just really better for you to stay stay at Western Kentucky. I mean, that's a Division I program. You're the offensive coordinator, but the fact that he just, I mean, was thinking about coming out to San Diego was a testament to what kind of friendship we had. As soon as I got the Stanford job, it was might have been the first hire that I made.
You got to hear that. We were talking last night, Jim, over at the house after you left, and Willie's talking about the story. He's 25 years old, and I retired from Western Kentucky, and Willie interviewed for the job. Willie, pick it up from there.
Well, I get a call from my AD saying that they wanted to interview me, and I'm like, oh, boy. Again, I knew one day I wanted to be a head coach. I didn't think that soon that I would get that opportunity. And so I didn't know what to expect from the interview or anything, and I tried to put some things together real quick, and it was really god-awful, you know. When I did not think back, I'm like, what are you doing, really? You know, so I'm sitting in there, and I'm nervous. I'm sweating bullets. You know, we got the president, the AD, everyone in there. And I'm sitting there, and they asked me a question, and I'm like, I was just so nervous. I felt so bad walking out of there afterwards. Like, man, you know, but when I left out of there, I said, you know what? The next time this happened, I'm going to make it hard for them to tell me no. And it was one of those instances where I felt like they thought enough of me to bring me in to interview. They felt that I can be a head coach one day. It's like I need to start preparing myself to be a head coach. And so I started doing internship. I did my first one with Oakland and with Coach Harbaugh out there with the Raiders when he was with the Raiders that first year. And then I did another one with John and the Eagles. And they both were great experience, and I learned so much football. I mean, the swipe play came from the Oakland when I was there with them, and it paid off for us that year. And then I continued to coach after the coach left for 5 or 6 years. And then Jim hired me. And I was out at Stanford. And the second year, I did a minority internship with the NCAA. And, again, great experience for me. And I remember Ward Manuel, our AD, your all's AD here. He came in to speak to the group. And you heard so many stories about how minorities aren't getting an opportunity to become a head coach. And you hear that a lot, and again, from afar, you don't know why. You just hear what you believe what you hear. And Ward came in, and he talked to all of us, and he was like, that's not the case. They're getting the opportunities. They're just not prepared when they go in on the interview. And then I thought back to when I interviewed when I was 25 at the time, I wasn't prepared. And, you know, it stuck with me from that point on. And so after that day, I had a notepad that I wrote in every single day. You know, when idea came up, I wrote in it. When Jim would say something, I was like, man, that's pretty cool. That's good. You know, I can do this. And the name of it was what a Willie Taggart coach football team would look like. So whenever Jim would say something academically or I talk with coach something, I always write it down and just think about it or what my staff would look like and just start to just do it every single day. And it got to the point where I can articulate that entire book, you know, and then need it. And so the next year, Toby was up for the Heisman Trophy and I get a chance to interview for the Western job. And the same people. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we're in that room. Now, the first time I was in there, I was sweating bullets. This time, I was sitting there like, I'm ready for this now, right? So now here's the kicker. Again, you always get advice from your mentors and your role models. And I remember talking with Jim. He's like, Willie, when you go in there, he said, here's what you do. You go in there. He asked him, what the hell been going on around here since I've been gone?
What the heck happened?
You know, and it was, and again, you listen to people who helped you out along the way and never stirred you wrong. And sure enough, when it was my time, it was exactly how I started the interview off. And it was great. I mean, it was awesome. And I mean, it went well. And, they offered me the job, and I remember driving down the road, and I called Jim. I say, Jim, they offered me the job, and I accepted it. He was like, great, great. He said, Willie, the good thing about it, you're the head coach at West Kentucky University. The bad thing about it, you're the head coach at West Kentucky University.
Just lost 23 games.
He was like, so let's get to work.
Yeah. And he went. He went. We talked about it, and he wanted to stay on for the bowl game. That was the first time Stanford had been in a bowl game, mm-hmm. the Sun Bowl, in 2009. In decades, at least a decade or almost two, and he wanted to stay. I said, "No, just go and start recruiting." Yep. And you know, we hired as his replacement.
Wait, Willie's got. See, Coach Harbaugh, again, working for Coach. Coach always had this thing where you lose someone, you got a chance to replace them with someone better. You know, so I was leaving. I remember just telling Jim, I was like, Coach, you know that statement you always make? I don't think it's going to hold true this time. Right? So he looked at me and shook his head like, yeah, okay. And then about a week later, he hired Jack Harbaugh. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
You got me again in your mind.
I was like, you got to be kidding me.
We came out for those 3 weeks. We're playing Oklahoma in the Sun Bowl, and Andrew had a bad thumb and couldn't play.
Yeah, broken. Yeah,
broke his thumb, so the things were going to fall on the Toby Gerhart, their tailback, coached by Jack Harbaugh now, and knew very little about what was going on with the offense. So first day there, I walk over to Toby, and he's such a great guy. He said, Toby, you know, Coach Harbaugh, Jack Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh's dad, and I just want you to know, I have no intention of being here next year as a backfield coach or any kind of coach. I'm going to be here for 3 weeks. What I want to do at the end of this 3 weeks is just one thing, and you can help me with it if you would. And he's got his eyes are bugged out. Yeah, Coach, what can I do? I do not want to get yelled at by the head coach. And I said, now, Toby, you may ask, how can you help that happen? I said, first of all, do not fumble the ball. Do not lay the ball on the ground for any purpose. Do not fumble. The other thing that upsets the head coach, whom I know very well, is pass protection problems. Backs fouling up pass protection problems. So block the right guy. Get in front of him. Could you do that for me? Yes, sir. You can count on me. And the last thing. This is kind of my own thing. Do not run out of bounds. Jim, I don't know how he feels about. I know how I feel about that. Stay in bounds, Coach. You can count on. He rushed for over 100 yards that game, and then
a couple touchdowns.
I don't know, Willie. When he was up for the Heisman in New York, did they say, "Coach, by Willie Taggart"? and Jack Harbaugh, or was it just Willie Taggart?
That was Jim Harbaugh.
And everywhere you've gone, you've had great success. I mean, everywhere you've been, it's just you've had the Midas touch. It just turns to gold, right? I mean, the Western Kentucky program completely turned around. One of the great coaching jobs, I think, maybe in the history of coaching. And then to South Florida, I think they were 2-9 or 3-9
when
you took over, and got that program back to great heights. And same at Oregon, and now Florida State. It's like I said at the beginning of the show, this man has hung the moon.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, like I said too, I had great mentors, and everything I do now in running our football program is what I learned under these guys. You know, the foundation of what we do is what I learned from these guys, and it works. You know, I took the blueprint and used it, and it's been working ever since. But I do know this, just surround yourself with good people really do helps.
Here's a message from our friends at Wells Fargo, a company with a storied past, and a big part of that past was built around building trust. Back in the day when the country headed west for gold, Wells Fargo was the bank trusted to bring it back east. But somewhere along the way, Wells Fargo lost their way. So now they're working hard to earn your trust again. They're making things right by ending product sales goals for branch bankers. They're refocusing on customer satisfaction, making it a top priority. They're working with more transparency and accountability and fixing problems proactively. It's a new day at Wells Fargo, but it's a lot like their first day. See what's new at wellsfargo.com/renew. Established 1852, reestablished 2018.
This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be. Welcome to our team. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
Now time for Jack Talk here in Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. It's myself. It's Jack. It's Matt Dudek. It's McKenzie as well. And Jack, a couple weeks ago, you celebrated a birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Well, I did. When you reach probably 75, it's best if you don't get a lot of phone calls and you don't get a lot of recognition. You just kind of move on through it softly and smoothly without any recognition of your birthday.
But you had like family in town. You had you went to Tigers game, right?
We did. On
so
that's
my birthday. A great way to hide. Yeah, you supported Concordia at an event that you spoke at. Your wife bidded against you pretty much, and and the guy who owned the tickets. And you guys went to the game, so that must have been fun.
We had a great time. We had a chance. Bob Melvin, the manager of the A's, is a close friend of Jim. And we were able to get down into the manager room before the game and had a chance to talk with him. Just a great guy. They're on a real roll right now. They're about 10 games above 500. But then as we were leaving Bob's office, assistant came in and told me that the umpire, the crew chief of the ball game, wanted to see us before we left the stadium. And so went into the room, and Ted Barrett was the gentleman that was the cheek roof that day. And he said, I had to say hello to you. He said, we go back a long way to 1980 when you were in Palo Alto coaching at Stanford. Jim was playing for Palo Alto High School. He said, I was at Los Alamos High School at the time. We competed in three sports. Jim and Ted competed in three sports, football, basketball, and baseball. And it's amazing athletics, the stories that are told. And he told the story about Jim was a punter for Palo Alto High School, and he was a defensive end. He said, I looked in and saw there's a possibility they're not going to block me. Sure enough, he said, the end blocked down, and here I come off the edge, and I realize I got a cold stone shot at blocking this punt. And he said the punt was a little bit high. Jim reached up for it, brought the ball down, and here I come. He said, I come across his foot. My hands are in the proper position. My body's in the proper position. And I go, I've got this one. He said, all at once, Jim stopped, stepped back, allowed me to fly by, and then punted the ball. And I thought to myself, maybe the only shot that I had in all of sports to block a punt, and I just lost it. But he remembered it like it was yesterday. He went on to college, where he was a captain of his football team, has done some magnificent things in his life and family. And then on Tuesday of the All-Star game, he'll be calling balls and strikes in that particular game. So another great story told because of our association with the great game of football.
That is a terrific story from your birthday. And so on your birthday itself, your son, Coach Jim for UM, tweeted, "Happy Father's Day, Jack Harbaugh, attacking the world with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind daily." And then it says, "Great genes and genes." So G-E-N-E-S for the gene pool and genes because you were in a pair of jeans that day when he took the picture, and you wear jeans a fair amount. But what I wanted to talk to you about actually was the responses that came in on his Twitter feed. I was floored by some of these responses. One came directly to us at AED Podcast, and it was from Matthew Maddox. He said, "Happy birthday, Jack. You won't go wrong listening to Jack Talk and Judge Judy." So there's a guy that knows what he's talking
about.
Who
would have ever thought in a lifetime that you would have Jack Harbaugh and Judge Judy in the same sentence? Magnificent.
So, Jack, I read you the first tweet, the first response to your son posting a happy birthday wish for you. But there were some other ones on here. It was fun to go through these. Some of them probably might take you a little bit of a trip down memory lane. We had one from Stephen Moffat who tweeted in, "Western Kentucky University has a lot to thank him for and you." So there's a picture of the football stadium down there with your name on it. The suites was on that tweet. So getting a love on your birthday from the folks down at Western Kentucky. They obviously have great appreciation for the great work that Jack Harbaugh has done.
We had a fantastic 14 years there. Program won, culminating in a national championship in 2002. It's amazing, different places that we've been over the years. It seems like they remember you more fondly when you win. I don't know why that is, but it's the recollections and the smiles on your face are much more predominant when you win games. Do you have any thinking
which
on
is,
that?
Which is funny, because if I ask coaches, what's your most vivid memory of insert name of stadium here, it's usually losses first and not wins. And so coaches tend to lean, and their memories tend to lean towards the losses, and fans tend to treat you better when you have wins under your belt. That seems to make actually a fair amount of sense.
Well, we had a great time there.
We had a tweet from S.R. Bolin, one of the follow-up tweets on the birthday message. It was just a funny joke. He said, "I have to say I'm a little disappointed he is not wearing khakis, because you were wearing jeans in the picture." And, of course, Jim is known for wearing khakis. But you don't do khakis a lot. That's a Jim thing.
Well, you try to allow him to be the jeans, or I'm the jeans guy and he's the khaki guy.
That's very nice of you.
So we got another one in here, and that I saw in here, and now I can't find it. But the premise of it was that this person had you teaching football 101. When did you teach football 101?
I taught that at Western. I remember the Doit Perry story.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. Right.
Very
Western,
wisely.
Right.
I thought I would emulate my coach and have a football 101 at Western Kentucky. Enjoyed it immensely. We had about 35 students took the class. We went out on the field and taught them the power play, that play that'll be etched on my grave at the time of my passing. So those 35 students will have a fond memory of that play. Maybe not me, but that play.
How about after from at Mr. Dunkware, "Jack, I bought your house in Kalamazoo."
Oh, my goodness.
How about that?
I remember that house well. It was one of those three-story houses, and I was painting the side of the house. Maybe I told this story. I painted the side of the house, and John and Jim were down there in the middle of the summer drinking lemonade and sitting under an umbrella, and Father John Grothraw was the St. Thomas More there. He was the parish priest and came by to spend the afternoon with us. And I'm up on the ladder, hanging onto the ladder, reaching out, painting the top tier of the house. And Father John asked, "Jackie, you got these two kids here. One's a senior at Miami of Ohio, defensive back. You got another one here. It's a sophomore at the University of Michigan, quarterback. And they're down here drinking lemonade in the shade, and the husband's up there painting the house." She says, "Father John, you think I'm going to take a chance on getting either one of those youngsters hurt?"
That is a football mom right there. A football wife, a football mom. That is beautiful.
You were recovered in a short period of time, but I'm not taking a chance on getting them hurt.
So we got a tweet in here from at Freedom, Maryland. "I love your dad. I had him for football 101. And then he says, "My brother taught you driver's ed at Pioneer." So that was a message back to his. So someone that had your class of football 101 had a brother that taught John and Jim had a drive when they were at Pioneer. This is it's fun to read some of these responses because then there's a lot of them that are just, you know, happy birthday or responding back to Jim. I remember, were you from Chicago or whatever it might be. But I it was fun reading, like, the one in particular about that house in Kalamazoo. Like, people really remember these things. I bought my house from Jack Harbaugh. I guarantee people that live on Anderson know that they live in the Harbaugh house.
Who is the guy that owns the M Den?
Scott Hirth and Koenig is the other one.
Scott Hirth.
Yeah.
We bought our house in Ann Arbor from his father.
Okay.
Scott lived in that house before we lived there back in 1973.
Wow.
I don't know how you, if we worked that in there somewhere.
That's interesting. So
we went to lunch one day and he goes, how'd you like that dormer up there in the... So you've never been in our house? Lived in the house.
I know it well.
That's funny. That's funny. So that was a nice reliving some of the memories people had or that you had from people's recollections that they tweeted some happy birthday wishes at your son for you. So that was a couple of weeks ago that you actually celebrated your birthday. So once again, happy belated birthday to Jack Harbaugh. Thanks again on this episode to Willie Taggart for joining us. Of course, Matt Dudek, McKinsey is here as well. And Jim Harbaugh, of course, for joining us on his podcast, the Harbaugh's Podcast, Attack Each Day here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Listen via the Podcast One app or on podcast1.com. You can contact us with hashtag Jack Talk or on Twitter at AED Podcast or at Ira in Ann Arbor. Follow us and favorite us on podcast1.com and the Podcast One app. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Thanks to Podcast One and sponsors TrueCar and Wells Fargo. Have a great week and keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save.